This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
I had a brief stint as a server at Outback Steakhouse in Manhattan, and I'm not kidding. I'm totally serious.
I didn't even know they had Outbacks in Manhattan, like Manhattan, New York, and not Manhattan, Kansas.
Not Manhattan, Kansas, which I have been to, by the way. Yes, Manhattan, New York City. Honestly, I don't even know if they're still there or this one existed, but it was the first one in Midtown Manhattan. And so as an actor at the time, I was like, oh, I had another restaurant job at the time. I was like, I can get a couple extra shifts. It'll be fine. I'm not really sure what possessed me. I got the job. Well, money is what possessed me.
As one does.
Right. You do what you have to do. Right. So I rocked like the blue button down shirt, which by the way, they make you pay for after your shift. You have to physically, at the time, again, this is a while ago, we had to physically give them money at the end of the shift for like shirt rental, which I totally thought was ridiculous. And why I don't make people who work for me pay for things. Totally different story and podcast. Blue shirt, flare pins, like the whole thing. I did it, served Bloomin' Onions. And for many, many reasons, paying for my shirt and many others, I didn't love this job at all. However, my favorite part of the job was going over and telling the patrons about dessert. And at the time, when I was working there, Outback Steakhouse served Bluebell ice cream.
Oh,
and yes. And so, and it was like this really big deal. And the owner of the Manhattan, huge, right? And the owner of the Manhattan Outback at the time, this guy instructed us every day. We'd have like a team meeting and he's like, and you got to go out there. And he's like, I want a Bloomin' Onion on every table and every table's going to get Bluebell ice cream. And he was like, you have to make a really big deal about this Bluebell ice cream. So, and I did, because it was the most fun to sell desserts. Yeah. And I'd be like, interested in dessert? We have Bluebell ice cream.
And everyone from the South is like, yes.
Yes, exactly. So you could see like, who this resonated with, and also like who was like, okay, it's ice cream. And I knew if people swooned or were they had a Southern accent that I was probably going to get like some really good dessert sales. Because if you don't know, because I don't think it, Lindsay, everybody knows about.
No, it's not. It's kind of one of those things where it's like you eat the ice cream and be like, where is it from? I mean, Texas. Right.
Yes, exactly. So it is a Texas-based creamery with a cult-like following. Yeah. And clearly, because my guest is very excited about it, she knows. Also, in my opinion, it is good ice cream. I'm an ice cream fan. And why am I telling the story? Well, my guest today is from Texas, lives in Texas, I should say, and knows something about Bluebell ice cream, as well as where ice cream comes from, which we're going to talk about, and also knows a couple of things about events. So that's, you know, it's a win-win. We got Texas, we got ice cream, and we've got events. And I'm so pleased to introduce the CEO at Nifty Method, our very own Texan for the next hour, Lindsay Martin Bilbrey. Welcome to Speaking of Events.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here, Carrie. I'm delighted. And I was like, I'm not sure where this is going. Like, is it Texas? Is it line dancing? Where are we? Bluebell ice cream. All right. Gotcha.
Yes. So obviously, Lindsay, my first question is, tell me about your cows.
Oh, please. I do. So my cows are a pandemic purchase, but they're not like an out of the blue pandemic purchase. So I'm actually from right across the Red River to the north of Texas, Oklahoma. And my father raised cattle my entire life. And I swore I was never, ever, ever going to live on a ranch again, right? So I went into live events and I traveled the world doing really amazing, glittering things. And then the pandemic hit and I didn't travel at all for like 6 months. I've had four kids, and 6 months is the longest time I've ever, I was like, oh my God. And then I bought chickens, and then from chickens, I bought goats. And then my son, who was like, can't we make our own milk, Mom? I was like, sure. And so then we bought cows, and it's just, it's been an adventure, and it's made for really interesting house hunting conversations with my friends from like New York City. They're like, what do you have? I'll be on a conference call and the cow will moo outside the window.
Yes.
When I work from home. But yeah, I mean, it's, it was a good return to my roots, as well as a nice grounding. Now, as I'm starting to travel again, I'm like, what am I going to do about having someone to feed while I'm out? But I've got all these teenagers at home who can do that for me. So I'm like, sure, that's how I learned accountability. I built fence and I fed the cattle. So I'm just passing on to the generations lessons learned of times of olden, I think is really where we're at.
Times of olden. Oh, that leads me to my next obvious question, which was, who eats the most, the goats, the cow, or the teenage boy?
Oh God, that's really tough. I mean, I just, especially because we're on summer break right now, and you go and you spend hundreds of dollars at the grocery store, not for inflation or supply chain issues, my friends. No, no, no. but because the oldest one can consume 2 gallons of milk in a day and a half. So I would say probably the teenagers, and then closely after that is the Holsteins. Yeah.
Wow. That's, and so you, do you miss, we will talk about events, I promise. Do it's you right. miss traveling? Did you, here's what I really want to ask. Did you miss it when you didn't?
Yes.
Did you miss it?
Yes. Desperately. Cause I, so it's funny, we've moved so many times. My husband's a former defense contractor. And so we moved 10 times in 12 years when we first got married. We've lived in every time zone the United States has to offer, which is fantastic because I built this amazing global like network of community. I've worked in several different places. And because of my business, those friends live in all of these places, right? So when live events was pre-pandemic, I basically saw and got to hang out with a different group every other week because we were on site or we were planning for something. We were at an industry event. And then it like screeched to a halt. I was actually at Zendesk's users conference. I was sitting on top of the Fontainebleau with their lead like director of sale or director of events. And I remember Sarah and I just looking at each other as we just watched hundreds of millions of dollars across the world just disappear. And we just went like, shit, what are we going to do now? Yeah. And I went home and I was like, this won't be that bad. And then it got worse. And by June, I was like, I don't know. And hybrid and virtual had started to kind of take off. We actually were lucky enough to have clients by the fall. We were traveling again, but it was like going into a war zone. The convention centers were shuttered and we were filming in these random studios. So to say that I'm glad we're getting back on the road, like last week I was in New York, just on a whim, my account manager called and said, do you want to go? I said, yeah, 3 days at Javits. Are you kidding me? You know, I'm willingly going to Las Vegas on purpose. That's yes. unheard of because we've missed each other. And so it's nice to have it. But that 6 months where I didn't really made me appreciate how much I like the pretzels from American.
Right. So what I was going to ask, as somebody who traveled a ton in the before days, was what about the travel did you miss?
Oh, I like the fact that for most airplane rides, you can get the internet, but it's inconsistent and you can't take conference calls. And so you had like long stretches of time where you could work. I mean, like that, yes. Number one. Number two is I actually really like airports. It's this like sick habit where I'm just like, I like to go and just, it's the site visit person inside of me. I want to be like, why did the Admirals Club use that particular carpet, you know? But there's a lot you can see. There's so much good energy inside of it. I didn't miss Uber and taxis. I will state that for the record. But I just, you know, a lot of it is the changing scenery. I don't sit still well. I don't idle well, which I think is common in the events world, right?
Oh, we're
always chasing something. And so travel allows me to be able to continue to chase that adrenaline high without having to pay to jump out of an airplane, which scares me to death. So, right. You know, I mean, it's just, I like the movement, if that makes any sense at all.
That does. And you're not the only person who said to me that they missed airport lounges.
Oh, yeah. I love an airport lounge.
The heads down work time, I absolutely miss. That was so glorious. And, or even if you had great internet on the airplane, you could be like, oh, it was really spotty. Sorry, I could not answer those Slack messages.
Exactly.
I was saying.
Like, sorry. Constant dinging, especially, well, right. No, last week I went and I decided not to. I ended up getting delayed because of all of like the summer travel. That's one thing I didn't miss is like during pandemic times, the airport was deserted. It was amazing. I mean, bad for the travel industry, but amazing otherwise. And now everyone wants to go on vacation. I spent more time in JFK security line. I have all the things, all the privileges. And it was an hour and a half. And I was like, girl. Yeah,
it's a long time.
So, you know, it would have been nice not to have that. But then when I got on the airplane, I just turned everything off. And my team later, like, where were you? And I was like, I don't know. There was weather over Chicago.
Ooh, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. That, well, welcome back to hardcore travel. I know I've been there. I've been stuck there. Well, I mean, and by there, I mean, all the places, all the airports.
Right. Yeah.
And that was just last week. So welcome back. What is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
How big of a team sport events is. This is a conversation we've been having at nearly every meeting I've been at lately, especially as events has moved under marketing or it's moved more closely to sales. You know, when we talk about events, we talk about the experience of being on site and like the cool ice sculpture you saw or the education of the person you ran into in the hallway. But when I'm thinking about it with like my actual event director hat on, I also look at it with like my chief marketing officer and my chief revenue operations hat on, because I'm like that full life cycle of how do we get them from somebody who doesn't know us from anyone all the way into being a raving evangelist. Events is a really critical face-to-face engaging online piece. And it takes all of us to make that happen, both inside the brand and outside. Like there's venue partners, there's people who drive the bus, like all of these things come together. And I think if more people knew exactly how many humans were part of that Tiger team, the level of value around why we spend this kind of money around events, why we spend it on the speakers, why we spend it on the hotels, why we spend it on the participants' experience wouldn't be quite so painful when we have to go and justify it to the CFO. So I think that's something that, you know, we really want to make sure is front and center over the next couple of years as the recession threatens us, as we're coming out of a pandemic. It's like we can't catch a break and the dumpster just stopped being on fire.
Right. Yes, yes. You mentioned a lot of hats in there. You've got a lot of hats, and I'm pretty sure there's a cowboy hat in there too. So would you tell us about the many, a few of, I don't care, of the hats that you wear at Nifty Method, and also, would you tell us where that name came from? Because I think that's kind of cool.
Sure.
And overall, just your empire. Can you just like walk us
through that? I mean, we call it an empire. I don't know. Like I started out as just like an event planner, and I say just an event planner, though that there's so many things events people do, right? And my mom, it actually goes back to the very beginning. She's the music director at the small little area. And we were right on the edge of one of the largest Native American reservations in my state. And so as a result of that, there were all these massive events that went on all the time. And my mother, who doesn't know how to say no, she's like, sure, I'll volunteer as tribute and run your event. And so I literally grew up behind a soundboard. I was the stage manager who helped people get on and off. I learned all the things back in. I was fascinated by it because it's amazing and always terrifying. And then it comes together and you're like, oh, we could do this again. It's like childbirth. You forget the bad parts of it. And so like going into it, I went to college. I was like, I'm never going to work in live events because I'm burnt out, right? I'm going to be a real grown up and I'm going to get a law degree and I'm going to do this. And then I didn't. I went back into live events. And so I would say like, that's the big hat. I always look at it first as an events person because I like to be backstage calling the show. But as I grew in my career, and because when I started my career, the internet was really turning up to 11, like social media was breaking out and all of the marketing automation, sales automation platforms, Salesforce, HubSpot, Oracle, they were all becoming part of the enterprise in a way where it had never happened like that before. And because I was the youngest person in the room, some executive was like, oh, well, you're young and you're hip. You can speak the tweeter. You can learn how the automations work together, do the things. And I was like, I work in live events. And they were like, yeah, it's all part of it anyways, right? And I'm like, I guess. I mean, sure. But it was really, so I just had to go and learn it. So I would say probably at Nifty, I started the company because our agency sits at the intersection of technology, marketing, and events with a little bit of sales thrown in, right? And because of that, we help you kind of take the idea and get it to reality. Because that's always like, we want to do this thing, but we want to make the sales guy happy. We want to do this thing, we want to make the marketing guy happy. I can do marketing automation and I love it. I'm actually sitting here working on a custom object for a Salesforce client right before we got on the call. Like, we can do that. But it makes me happy when we open the doors and the room is silent and then everyone floods in and the music starts. Like, that's the type of stuff that's like giving me goosebumps even talking about it. So I think that's kind of, if I had to pick a hat, that's it in the order of importance. So you asked me how I named the company, so I can do that. We named Nifty Method a lot of times just because I always say there's a method to the madness. I believe in scenario planning for whatever you're doing, whether it's your marketing campaign, your sales campaign, your field event, whatever, right? Because there's never a right or a wrong. When you tend to look at what we do for a living in black and white, you're gonna really run into a lot of challenges. And so for us, we come up with different scenarios. And I'm a big fan of movies from the 30s and 40s. And The Philadelphia Story, there's a whole section where Katharine Hepburn was talking about, she's, you know, trying to decide if she's going to get back with her ex-husband. She's engaged. There's like a whole thing. And she's talking about how they love sailing. That's something they have in common. She's like, we just love to take it out and just do the nifty thing. And it just made me, that whole Algonquin Club, the way you talk about it, it made me happy. And a method is basically you're getting from good to better. You're never done. It's constant iteration of, you take the method and you practice it and you continue to put it into practice. And I like that because it's particularly good. You're never great. You're never done, but you're always taking a step forward and trying to solve a problem that exists so that the next scenario can be conquered. And I liked that as we were kind of figuring out our branding.
That is awesome. You know, there's not many people I talk to that make me feel like I'm calm, and you are nailing it for me. Like, I'm typically the one like on fire. You're on like triple fire, and I love it. So thank you so much. I had gotten fires on my brain. So a couple of weeks ago, I got asked a question that if the three lines of my business of Ovation does like three major things, your three lines of business were on fire, which one would you save? And you can only save one, which one would it be? And so I thought it was such a fascinating question. I want to throw it to you. Out of all the things that you do, they're in front of you, they're on fire. Which one are you going to save?
The events business.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be the events business, because we are at our core an events business that happens to do marketing and sales and tech. And everything stems from that. And I'd still get to do the other things, but if I had to take events out of my life, I'd shrivel up into a ball and die.
Yeah. Yes.
True stories.
Yeah. So out of mine, which was like corporate learning and development, partnerships, events, and then my B2C product, Studio G, guess one, which one I picked too.
Speaking. Yeah. But see, I think, Carrie, you and I talked about this in the pre-interview, like events people, we try to quit and we can't. Like, we're like, no, we're going to do this other thing. And then 3 months later, we're not doing the other thing.
You're back. Right. Well, it's infectious. Get infected in a good way. It's great. You mentioned, you threw in HubSpot, which I wanted to talk about.
Did.
We're HubSpot users. I'm a huge fan. So would you talk a little bit about that partnership that you have going on? It's really highlighted on your website.
Yeah, no, we love HubSpot. We love all of our technology partners, but HubSpot is a place where about 2014, so I had gone through this really painful Salesforce Teradata migration at a client I was working with beforehand. And I kept going, oh my God, this has to be easier. And I found HubSpot completely by accident. I was looking for a class to attend and they were running one of their free trainings. And this is back in the dark ages when HubSpot only did marketing, right? And so we kind of worked with them them. There were two clients I was working with. We brought HubSpot into the ecosystem and we ended up getting, you know, like what we would like to say, really good at it, certified in it. And we became a partner in 2017 for two reasons. One, it's a great referral source as an agency and you were really allowed to find your niche. Like we have a channel account manager, Zoya Esty, who's phenomenal. And her mom's a travel agent, which is why they gave us as an agency to her, because our background is live events and marketing, connecting those together. So we adopt a lot of those clients when we work with them. And she spoke our language, because events, if you don't work in events and you treat it like another business, people are always like, that what? And she already understood the language. The other reason we really like HubSpot is that it continues to grow. And, you know, Salesforce and Oracle do the same things with it, but the ecosystem's so large. HubSpot really has a place for nonprofits, small business, growing business, the enterprise. You know, it's really adapted and it's got this single view that just makes me happy that I can access on my phone when I'm on site. So I think there's a lot of things there. We try to be agnostic, but we do love them quite a bit.
Yes. This episode sponsored by HubSpot.
I know. Yeah. Every time I go on, she always laughs. She's like, are you going to say nice things about us? And I was like, of course.
Of course. Absolutely. Huge, huge fans. I don't know about you. There's a lot of event professionals I talk to. There is this feeling of we're on this precipice of everybody went through this big pivot. We're on the precipice of a massive future and moving ahead into this future of unknowns and excitement. So what does that future of events look like to you?
More change. I was on another webinar 2 weeks ago. We were talking about this with a bunch of events industry people. And it's funny because hybrid, like a lot of us were doing hybrid in 2008. We just called it a live stream and a live event.
Right.
And now we're kind of doing that again. Like it feels to me actually a lot like 2008 because we've got recessions threatening us. There's lots of world events happening. There's an election that's threatening in the future. And so I think one of the biggest things that's both good and challenging on the future for event professionals is the fact that we are faced with an enormous amount of change. And that's nothing different, but I think we're more burnt out than we used to be. And I think the decision-making process has gotten more complex in a way that we haven't been as prepared because we've been so busy fighting the fires of the last 2 years. So I think it's going to be exciting to see what happens to us as an industry, but I also, you know, in the back of my mind, is I anxious? You know?
Yes. But yeah. I mean, I feel the state of the world. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I is anxious. Yes. All right, I need to talk about my favorite topic. We've got to bring it back to speakers because I'm obsessed.
I love speakers.
It's my gig. We love speakers. We love talking about their missteps, misfortunes. Sometimes bless their hearts. Yes. So, do you have a bless their heart disaster moment you'd like to share with us?
Oh gosh. Yes, I can't remember the story I told you now. There's so many of them. You speakers, you just give and give. Like it's funny because I used to work at the National Speakers Association, which is an association just for professional speakers. And so there's so many of them. Whereas, like, do I tell that story? And you know it's you if you watch this. I think the biggest bless your heart story I've ever had is one time we had Penn from Penn and Teller, and he was going to speak at an event for us. And he wanted to light something on stage, very similar to that West Wing episode where he burned a flag, but not quite so controversial. And it was a brand fire marshal for the San Diego hotel we were at. And the paperwork, my friends, the paperwork. And Penn was just this absolute delight. I mean, he did a meeting beforehand so that we could kind of figure out what he was talking about, gave us all the information, totally prepared us, didn't throw it into my lap that, by the way, I'm lighting things on fire on your stage, which is always considerate and not always the case. Because sometimes they're like, we want to throw knives on stage, and you find out about it 5 minutes before they roll the wheel on stage, right? That's also happened. So, you know, it was really one of those things where you go, ooh, this could be worse, this could be better. And it still happened. We've got great footage. And it went on. But I think, you know, in the stories that always come to my top five of would I live through that willingly again without gin? That's not One of them. Yeah, no, I've got some of the bad ones, but you know, that's like a cocktail party. Come and find me and we'll share our war stories together.
Yes, that's what I adore, the war stories. It makes us stronger, smarter, and a little more aware of things like fire and knives.
Yeah. So I will say the pandemic for speakers, especially working with speakers, it was an equalizer in a lot of ways. Some of the speakers who had no business being a professional speaker didn't make it. And though I hate the Darwinism of some of that, it really did. The ones that survived and excelled are ones that I would have put on my stages beforehand and still do about it. And, you know, and the ones that didn't do as well, but still survived, came out of it with a humbling that I've seen improve the craft. And that's been something that the platform skills, the attention to detail, the event planner's asking you for this stuff. She's not crazy. This is why she's asking you for it. Attitude has shifted. And so that's been also really fantastic, because speakers as a tribe, they're really wonderful to work with for the most part, because, you know, event planners, we roll the same way. We're probably pretty great to work with for the most part. So it's been nice to watch their industry continue to evolve and shift and excel in this new world we're living in.
Yes. And it allowed people to, who hadn't spoken before, to get comfortable. That was exciting for us as the speaker coaches and trainers. That was exciting to have a world of people who said all of a sudden, maybe it's not so scary if I can't see the audience.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It's still like, that's like tearing down the barrel of a gun, but
literally it is. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like the comedians were the ones I always worried about, right? Because like they're so dependent on the audience for the laughter. Like you do the setup and then you're like, did it land? And then I see Jason Hewlett come out full Jason Hewlett. And I'm like, they'll be fine. Look at him. Yep. They'll be fine.
Yeah. You know? It is. It's difficult and it's weird. And we talk about all that in coaching and prepping, of that you are getting a reaction, you don't know what it is, and you have to act as if and stay connected. So how do you prep your speakers when you have to? What are some of the things?
It depends on the client, really, for what they're looking for. And it depends on the speaker. Some speakers, the former CEO of the Dallas Mavs, Sid Johnson, she's one, or maybe not Sid, I can't remember her last name, but she comes on stage and she dances. We put her in front of a green screen, porting her into another studio. And she gave, hands down, one of the best pandemic speeches for a user conference we did that I've seen in years. She was just electrifying. And she was in Dallas and I was in New York when we were filming it. A lot of that, you get to know the energy of the speaker. You watch the footage. It's why professional speakers, having a sizzle reel and having footage of yourself is so important. We can kind of understand how you like to be, so that the questions we're answering or asking you, so that we can prep you to like make sense of what's going to happen with our audience, will collide. So I'll give you an example from a Salesforce event I was at last week. They had Janelle Monáe come on. They had an executive interviewer. The executive was not really good. She's a lovely woman. I'm sure she's excellent at her job, but she didn't necessarily need to be a moderator, right? But she got it because she loved Janelle Monáe. You could tell it was hero worship happening. She was so excited. Janelle Monáe is a celebrity speaker, and she was like, I'm going to talk about these four things, but I don't want to get it detailed. And they went in and they did it. And it was a great session, but it could have been a better session if like the two sides had talked to each other just a little bit more from a prep perspective. And so we always say, do the prep beforehand for both sides. And if the other person's not going to let you do it, then at least have a bolt hole where you can guide the speaker into, so they can sit there and riff about the things they're passionate about. Cause that's why you paid their outrageous speaking fee in the first place. Right.
Yes.
Cause if you keep trying to drive it back to what you're trying to sell to the audience, the speaker won't play unless they're really, really good at their job. And unfortunately, not everybody's at that level yet. So I think that's our prep, is like, don't not do the prep. I could have been more eloquent, which is why I do not professionally speak for a living.
Don't not do the prep, AKA prep.
There you go. See?
Yeah. That's why this is my gig. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what?
Coach me here. Help me, Carrie. Help
me. I'm here for you. If there's one thing you wish speakers did, what would that be? Either all the time, most of the time,
or work the thing that's the room that's before you take the stage.
Work Christine, the room.
Yes. Christine Cashin is a master at this. She comes in, she'll find a happy hour. She'll find the audience milling around out in the, I mean, whatever. She hates green rooms, right? The woman comes in and no one knows who she is yet, right? And she just goes in and she does, there's actually a whole pattern built off of the North Star that she works the entire space about. And she gets little anecdotes and little observations about the crowd. And then she comes on up. And she's able to take something, even though she's done just enough research to be dangerous about it. It's from normal platform speech. And she has always got it customized. And like, I've seen her speak in front of 50 different audiences. And every single time she leaves that audience thinking they know her and she knows them. And that is a skill that I have always wished more speakers would adopt, because even in a gigantic room, she does that. And can you think 10,000 people connecting with the one human you've brought on stage? I mean, they're going to listen more. They're going to be engaged. They're going to adopt whatever she's advocating for. And so, you know, I know the celebrities can't, but the normal professional working speaker, take time to get to know the humans you're speaking with and make it a two-way audience. And it's going to be a better event for all of us, I think.
Absolutely. It is easy to go out and say, nice to meet you. What are you hoping to get out of today's session? Or what are you looking most forward to? It's going to put them in a good mindset and give you so much content or fodder to bounce around and even infuse in your presentation. If you're a nimble enough speaker to do that, there is a certain level of mastery over your content and being able to bounce around to be able to do that. And yeah, you're right. It makes it so much better for the attendees. Yeah. And is that who events are for? Is it for the attendees? Who are events for?
Participants. And oh my God, you've hit my soapbox there. Yeah, like at the end of the day, the events are for the people who are sitting in the chairs. You know, they're the ones, like, you spent all this money on it. You did it for who? Your boss? Your boss doesn't care. I mean, she probably looks good from the thing, but like, they're for the participants. Everything comes back at that at the end of the day. And if you're not leading something towards making that participant's life experience, outcomes, whatever it is you said was your goal for your event better, then you've not done your job in whatever role you play in the team sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. We've covered a lot. Am I missing anything? Is there anything you want to share?
So let me turn it back on you. What do you think the single most important role is in an event? I mean, what would you say?
You mean other than speaker trainers?
I mean, other than speaker trainers, obviously.
Right. It's all about me.
You're obviously right here, because otherwise. Right.
It is. Thank you for asking me. No one ever asks me questions. It is, in my opinion, the audience and making sure they are immersed in a story and they are emotionally a part of this event. So whether that's connecting with the speaker or content in some way and feeling like, ideally, if everyone's leaving saying, I had an experience, whatever that is for them, that's a win. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And that's just what you do. That's what the Nifty Method is. Creating experiences and so much more. All right, Lindsay, you're keeping me on my toes. Are you ready for the Lightning Express round?
Let's do it. I drank all the coffee just for you this morning.
Okay. Is that what's in the cup? What is in the cup that's not on the Lightning Express round?
That's water. It was actually water. Yes, because I'm a grown-up and it is not yet noon.
Okay. Oh, fair. Okay. Very fair. All right. I'm going to put 45 seconds on the clock. There's no clock. And ask you 7 questions. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Number 1, what is your favorite moment in the event process?
The moment they open the doors before everyone comes into the room.
I love it. Who do you consider your mentor?
Oh, there are so many. I don't just have one, because, you know, the AV people teach me the AV, the event design people teach me the design. Everybody who I talk with makes me smarter. And so I like to say that I've got this great big group of mentors, thank God.
Yes. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. All right. What's your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Vanilla. I'm so boring, but it's delicious. And Bluebell is excellent. So is Brahms. Yes. I mean, they're right there, neck and neck.
Okay. So would it be Bluebell vanilla or Brahms?
Oh God, that's really tough. It depends on how hungover I am. True story. I am a grown up.
Yes. And it's not yet noon. Okay. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane? This could involve gin or ice cream or anything else.
So recently it has been going onto Tumblr and reading fanfic about the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is really pretty nerdy to admit out loud, but it's this calm space that the rest of the internet doesn't touch. And it's this alternative universe where Lenny Bruce lives. And I think that right now I need that.
I did not know about that. I'm a huge Maisel fan and that sounds
amazing. No, I'm obsessed with the writing and there's so many, because you get access to so many other great writers. And so back to the story, I love storytelling. Yes. And so there's just the whole universes they've built and that's really calming. And so that's what I've been doing for my mental health. For my actual health, I've been trying to go to the gym.
That's pretty good. Hey, fun fact, one of the Ovation trainers was on this last season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I'm going to drop it. Yeah. I'm going to drop that. Okay, because all our trainers are professional actors. Anyway, question six, are you ready?
Do it.
Who was your wedding planner?
So it's the only event I didn't plan in my entire life. I hated being engaged. It was awful. It was an awful experience. I got married at the Thunderbird Chapel in Norman, Oklahoma. And there was this delightful woman who was the in-house wedding planner, and bless her heart, I was like, listen, here is some money, here is the wine, go and make good choices and let's do this. The only request I have is that I walk down the aisle to Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And that's it, I'm good for the rest of it, y'all. Make good choices. And that's what happened and it was a delight.
That is amazing. Wow. To relinquish all that control in this world that you do all this. And I knew you hadn't planned your wedding, which is why I had asked you that question. That's not just a normal lightning express round. Okay, one more. What's the best way to take care of an event professional?
Before the event, please make sure that they have a good supply of goldfish and coffee. During the event, please make sure they have a good supply of goldfish and coffee. And post-event, please make sure that you fill out your event surveys and tell them what they did in a constructive manner, my friends, and then send red wine or gin. Either works.
That is perfect. Thank you. You have survived our lightning express round. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You have so much to say and so many fantastic resources, ideas, energy, which is lovely. Where can people find you if they wanted to connect with you? Where could people find you?
Sure. So I keep up a rather active Twitter feed under Lindsay the CMP. And then you can find us at niftymethod.com and all of the social channels associated with that one. We'd love you to come in and just chat and talk and have a cup of coffee with us online or at the next show that we're hopefully at together.
That's right. I'm going to do all those things. Thank you so much for being my guest here on Speaking of Events. I'm ready to go. I am jazzed. I'm ready to go. And so thank you. Thank you again for your time and your insight and a really fun time, in my opinion. Was it fun for you? You said
it was. We got to talk about cows, gin, and the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, plus a live event. I mean, for me, that hits all things.
Yeah, don't forget the ice cream, please. Come on. Thank you to the audience for listening. This was a doozy and I loved it. If you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, but let's be honest, who loathes events? Tell someone about this podcast and give us a 5-star rating. Come on, Lindsay is worth it. She's worth like 50 million stars. So let's give it to her, give it to me, give it to us. Thank you again, Lindsay. This is wonderful. And remember, everyone, that keep speaking, and whatever you speak about, remember to be speaking of events. Thank you so much.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovation.